energy, all of you bulked up. Every single one of you. So some of you have seen calculus before and know how to differentiate, maybe to integrate before. Some of you may only have a vague idea of what those words mean. That's fine. What we'll do is we'll actually be splitting you up into two groups. So those that have seen calculus before and have used it before and feel very comfortable with it, and those that haven't. And it doesn't matter which group you're in, because by midday, everyone will be taught the same stuff and be roughly at the same level. So it doesn't really matter which group you're in. You'll end up at the same location. It's just the route that we take there will be different depending on whether you've seen calculus before or not. So, one announcement. So I know we have, it's a lot of people in the room here, it's a very large number, we're all kind of packed in here, but just while the presentations are on for your fellow classmates' benefit, we do actually need you to be silent while there are lectures going on. So we'll try and keep most of the afternoon sort of non-lecture style stuff, tutorial style stuff, because I know that from 9 a.m. to 5 here, it's a lot to concentrate, but we do actually need you to be quiet. Just so if you're not, then it's actually very distracting for people, and it's kind of hard to hear and for people to concentrate with different accents, such as my own, and different voice languages. So thank you for that. Did anyone spend any time thinking about the home play problems? Okay, great. That's fantastic. So what we will be doing first thing after lunch, I'll be going through those. So if you could maybe just keep them on hold for a little while. And then at 1 p.m. after lunch, we'll be going through those. Also about t-shirt. Was anyone thinking about the t-shirt? A bit. Okay, great. Okay, so you have a bit over a day to do that, but please do think about the t-shirt. And what we'll be doing tomorrow at lunchtime is you'll be giving me some final designs for the t-shirt. And they will include things on the front, things on the back, but we can't actually put anything on the sleeve. So anything you'd like on the front and on the back, but unfortunately nothing on the collar or anything like that.
Do you have any other restrictions?
Not really, apart from obvious ones.
More than one color?
Sorry?
More than one color?
More than one color. Actually, no, I think, yeah, actually I think of one color, unfortunately. So I think one color, basically. Yep. For anything else, so you will be coming up with a number of final designs. And what we found in previous camps is different people have different designs is fine. So you will present the final designs, and then we're democratic, we'll take a vote. Okay. So.
And is it definitely a black t-shirt?
Definitely a black t-shirt. It could be white. It could be maybe black or white.
Not white.
Okay, I'll let you discuss that amongst yourself. But we can vote on that as well. Yeah.
Let's vote on everything.
Purple.
Okay, so what we'll do now, so those of you who maybe don't feel comfortable and confident with calculus, you'll be staying here in this room with Michael, and he'll be taking you through some aspects of calculus, and he'll be going at a slightly slower pace. And those of you who feel confident with it, and feel like you can, so if I should put one... Put one up, and so roughly we should be about a half and half split, because Michael and I, we went through and looked through what you had put down in the preliminary survey that we had, and it was roughly about 50% of people would generally got the calculus quiz and 50% didn't. And again, it doesn't really matter, fundamentally it doesn't really matter which group you're in. It mainly matters for you, because if you're in the kind of wrong group, you'll either be going too slow or too fast. So what do I mean by confident? I guess if you have something like, uh,
Minus 23 to 3.
Okay, so if you look at that and you think, nah, you know, that's simple, like do that, you feel confident, go with John. And if you think, well, I'm not really sure about that, or what does DX mean, then stay here. So we should be roughly about half and half split. So those of you... Thank you. So those of you who feel confident, you could stand up now and follow that person.
We have our first really official break at 10:20. It's about an hour from now. So we'll go for an hour. We'll have a break, cover, then we'll finish it up after the break, and you'll be Calcus experts. Because in the afternoon, I've got some Calcus questions for you to work on, and you'll talk to them here as well. I'm not going to make you suffer on your own. Go through those. It helps you get a feeling of real questions, so you can always, it's nice to see the, it's like reading a text. You notice that? In school, you look at examples, and they give you this nice, easy example, and then you go to the question, and you go, huh?
That's
exactly no clue. some places, there's the author going, I certainly was endeavored not to have that rigor. The examples I did give, I have provided the solutions for the teachers, and if you ever stop, because, you know, sometimes you still want to work on it, you don't get it in 5 minutes, and sometimes it's a good problem, you want to figure this thing out. And there'll be teachers here that will have the answers, and they can show you the answers, or you can read the answers, they can guide you to the answers as well. Alright. Now, has anybody here not had any calculus at all?
Perfect. Just a couple.
I'm going to start you right at the beginning. Remember what we're going to do? Grok. That's the purpose. The whole concept is to grok it. And I'll spend some time showing you what works, why it works. We won't kill ourselves in that. I'll get you to the shortcuts, because I like shortcuts. I like it when it's easy to do stuff. Hopefully you'll do it the same way. So, now, there are two fields of calculus. There's what they call differential calculus. Those are the ones that you see the dx and DTs, a whole bunch of Ds, something with you may see symbols like this. You may say, okay, dy, dx. Or you may see symbols like this. Or you may see symbols like this. Or you may see symbols like this. Right? Or you may see symbols like... something like that. All those things represent one type of calculus. It just means, dude, let's do a derivative. Whatever derivative is, we're going to do it anyways. That's all that means. Okay? So, and we'll talk all about that. So, those are just symbols. Which one do you use? Whichever one you feel comfortable. Whichever one gives you the most amount of information. And I'll explain the advantages of each one of them as we go through. So, that's going to be differential calculus. You see, if you look at some textbooks, you see those things. The other side of calculus, which was thought to be totally independent, is called integration. This is things where you see symbols that look like this. This is a funny one. So you, and they'll usually put stuff like this, 3x, and they'll put like a 3 and a 9, and sometimes look more than one of those things. That's integral calculus. Now, there is actually a tie-in between the two. It's kind of neat. We will spend 95, probably 96% of our time over here. I will introduce you what this is all about, so you'll get a gut feel about it. These ones are not too bad. You learn all the rules, and you'll be able to differentiate with, like, with the best of them. Here, you'll have a good understanding, and some of you will be able to think it through. We like using computers to handle these ones because they do a better job than me. Okay. And I'll explain where it all comes from. So remember what I said? I want this to grow. Rather than memorize it, to grow. If you understand why we're going to use this, and you'll feel very, very comfortable with this thing called calculus. All right. Where to start? At the beginning. When we study physics, we're interested in things that change. If things don't change, it's boring. If I just stay here like this. After about 5 minutes, right? For the first 3 minutes, you'll be giggling and jumping up and down, and you know, some of you may try to do all this stuff, right? Like, it's boring if things don't move, right? We want to discover what's happening. And the way to discover what's happening is to see how things move. So I was like, you notice I'm going back and forth. When I go back and forth, my position is changing. You may even have a stopwatch, a ruler, and you can even measure how fast I'm moving. You can calculate my speed. Yes. You may then say, okay, I got good speed, stop, slow down, change directions. You can even calculate if I'm accelerating, right? That's basically heart and soul of this. It was developed by, I'm going to give it to Newton. Some people will give it to Newton by the name of Leibniz. But I read some of writings from Leibniz to Newton, and Leibniz indicates that he's following off some of the work that Newton did. So they probably did stuff together to send information back and forth. Remember, there's no email back then, so things that people buy letters and things like that. No fax machines, so things weren't necessarily saved. So Newton wanted to do this whole thing. He wanted to help figure out how things moved. And he had the same skill set that you had initially. Remember, you were in science class, probably these experiments when you measure things, like from point A to point B, you had somebody with a stopwatch, or you threw balls off the table and watched them fall and measure things. And he did it the long, hard way. And he said, there must be an easier way. And he started taking apart and analyzing the things in movement. And he created some interesting, ugly stuff. And then from this ugly stuff, something wonderful happened. A shortcut appeared. And with this shortcut, he sat there and said, hey, you mean I can do this thing and get the answer in 3 seconds rather than 5 minutes? I like it. And he He didn't coin the word calculus, he actually coined the word infinitesimals. Again, probably to impress his friends. So let's just get a good conceptual understanding of what we're going to deal with. So let's just talk and show the next example. They never had any rules here, I always laugh at that. But let's just see if we can put together. I'm going to draw a nice Cartesian plane, XY. That way you can go time and things like that. Just start with XY. But let's call this my x-axis, this my y-axis, and let me draw today's favorite curve. Okay, so suddenly I did an experiment. There was the end result, just like you graph something. What an interesting, let me pick a point. Let's pick this point right there. That point is A, i.e. x equals A on my axis. And if I'm using functional notation, let's see if you can tell me what this value over here is going to be. So you can think of, okay, so this is like my function value, right? And remember, here's when x is equal to A, so what do I put inside the f? A, there it is. That's f of A, that's it. Right? That's all it means, right? Just a y value. And you'll see a lot of people writing y values, writing stuff, keep forgetting. So it just, this not a variable. Now, what I'm interested in is how fast this curve is changing. It's rate of change. And when you guys are probably in grade 9, they talked about rate of change. Now, this one. Use the rule. And rate of change. You wrote that piece, is the slope of the line that just touches that. This is called a tangent line. So you just imagine to be taking a ruler, and I move the ruler just so it touches the curve right at A. So it just touches right at that little spot there. And the slope of this line, whatever this slope is, remember, what is the equation of the definition of a slope? Okay, look at this. You added y2 minus y1 over
x2 minus
x1. Any other definitions you guys heard of? Rise over run, right? I like that one too. I heard deltas. Delta y over delta x. Some people say, all it is you're figuring out, and here's, now, delta y is scientists being lazy, and rather than writing it y2 minus y1, delta just means to change it. So all it is this type here, this is like, just like delta y and delta, right? Changing y, and it's just a slope. So we're saying, okay, no problem. Now the problem that we have is we're trying to draw the slope to a function, here's my function, f of x, and I want to calculate the slope right at this dude right there, where the slope touches the graph in only one spot. Now, I don't know what my function is. All I know is one point of my function. The point I know on my function is right here. A and f of A, that's all I know. Looking at this, what do you need to calculate your slope?
2 points.
2 points. We've got a dilemma, right? So the first thing you say, okay, why don't, maybe I need 2 points, because you need 2 points to calculate the slope. There's no ways about it. You need 2 points to calculate the slope. Delta y or delta x, or y2 minus y1 is the rise over run. Maybe if I approximate my slope, maybe I won't get the exact slope as the initial thing. So rather than drawing my line right there. Maybe I'll draw my line, and I'll just make it worse, right here, so that it goes through the same point, but it goes through over here. So see, I've got 2 points there. It's close, but it's not identical. So here's the 1 point, here's my other point. So rather than a slope, what do you call this? You're right, perfect. It's called a secant. So a secant is like an approximate tangent. The touch vector is in more than one spot. Okay. Now, with a secant, I got 2 points. I can calculate the slope, right? Problem is, the slope I calculate is not the same as the slope of a tangent. So what do you think I can do to get a better approximation?
Pick 2 points closer.
Oh, perfect. Rather than this point over here, why don't I bring the point over here? And then you say, well, why stop there? Right? Why don't you pick a point here? Why stop there? Why don't we do here? And so on. And so we want to get the 2 points as close together. And that's why you call it infinitesimal, because the space in between them is infinitesimally small. Does that make sense on that? So we want to create the sort of a secant, because we have 2 points. But we want to get 2 points so close together that it acts almost like the sort of a tangent. And if you understand that, you understand what the derivative is all about. The derivative is the slope of the tangent line. Gives you the instantaneous rate. Gives you the instantaneous rate change at this point A. It tells you exactly how fast the curve is changing at A. The problem is that we have is to calculate a slope, we need 2 points. So we're going to take this other point and make it close as together to the first point that we want. Now, how we're going to do that is we're going to do that via yes.
Why can't you just find the
right point
on the tangent line?
Oh, well, the problem is, all I know is the function. Right? So, see, that's what I'm given is the function. And I'll do this. I can draw my any tangent line I want, but I'm interested in what happens right at this little dude right there. Right? And I can sit there and try to find, but I don't know what the tangent line equation is. All I know is 1 point on the tangent line, A and half of A. Right? Even if I, and I'll do an example, actually, have the numerical equation, right? We'll do one where we actually have, like, I'll do like x squared or something nice and easy like that. We'll just work it through. I do have the 1 point on my tangent line, but in the equation of a tangent line, I need a point and I need some other piece of information. So I'm still stuck with one piece of information, so no matter how I do this, I'm stuck, right? So we need some sort of technique to guide us. This technique is something called limits. You may have heard of people talking about a limit. Now, what a limit is, and it's a conceptual piece of information that takes a while to get around to grok. But I'll try to demonstrate some of the ways our early ancestors, specifically in Greece, they figured out there was a problem. They didn't have the math knowledge to try to resolve it. I cannot walk to that wall over there. Impossible for me to walk to that wall. I can prove it mathematically. Right? For me to walk to the wall, first I have to walk halfway there. Then, to continue to walk the wall, I have to walk halfway the remaining distance. So you can walk. But then I have to walk half the remaining distance and half the remaining distance, half the remaining distance, and half the remaining. There's no way for me to get to the wall. It is impossible for me to even touch the wall. I cannot do what I'm doing mathematically. Right? Because I still have half the remaining distance to go. No matter how close I get, I still have half the remaining distance to go. And we kind of know that I'm doing it. So there was a way out of this. And this technique of limits actually resolved that as well. So what a limit says, I'm going to approach something. I'm going to get as close as I want to. And as I get as close to, as I want to, it is in fact going to be equivalent of getting there. I don't even have to physically get there myself, but the idea of the limit as I go there will actually make it work. So this is how we're going to use this. I'm going to take one point. You would agree? Here's a good point on my graph. First point. I'm going to pick another point. Let's start this point over here. And I'm going to make it, rather than calling it B, I can call it B if I want to call it B, but I'm going to call it something else. Its point is going to be A, and you say, well, that point over there is A, so how can this point be here A? But I'm going to say it's A, but I'm going to add this distance here, I'm going to call that H. So this point here, this distance here is A, and this one distance here is H. So it's H units away. You know what I'm saying? So one point is right here at A. The other point is H units away from A. So its X value is A plus H. So you see how we're doing it abstract? This is cool. A lot of people cannot handle abstract. I can easily put numbers down. I'm going to take the abstract the other way. Well, that's the X value. The Y value is A plus F of A plus H. Whatever I give the x value, I just shove it into the f function that we did yesterday, and that's the y value, whatever that turns out to be. So you say, no. You mean I can copy the slope of the secant line? Well, yeah. The slope of the secant line between those two points, secant. Right? Y2 minus y1 over x2 minus x1, well, that's f of a plus h minus f of a. That's like y2 minus y1. Remember, y is equal to the f value. And my x2 minus x1 will be this dude minus this dude. So that is just a plus h minus a. And I can simplify the bottom part just a bit. So that's f of a plus h minus f of a. And a plus h minus a is just h. Well, that's the slope. If I knew what a was, I knew what h was, and all this stuff, and I can plug in some numbers, I can actually calculate numerically the slope of that secant line. And that's, remember, this is just equivalent to delta y, delta y over delta x, right? Changing the y value, right? Changing the y value, f of a plus h, f of a, so this is changing the y value, delta y, and delta x is just, it makes sense. See how delta x turned out to be the h, the difference between the two guys? Neat. But like you said, we've got to get it to get closer. So all we want to happen is you want h to go to which value?
Zero.
That is calculus. This is the definition. This is the first principle definition of calculus. This is sort of the tangent line. It's exactly the same, but we want to put in front of it the limit as h goes to zero of and that will simplify this is so important. This is the definition of the derivative. Because remember, all the derivative is the slope of the tangent line at that point A. If somebody invents a brand new function, Because we're going to do a bunch of shortcuts. We'll do one example the long way, and I'll show you how the shortcut really works, and you're going to love the shortcut. If you suddenly invented a brand new function, and they want to develop a shortcut, they use this. They just plug it into this thing. This will calculate every single derivative of every function in the known universe. And three functions in an unknown universe, too. But it works. Right? Gives you the what we call the fundamental first principles definition of derivative. Okay, so here, we'll draw the shortcuts. But let's do a practice one. So you've seen it abstract. That means you've seen it with no equations. Let's do it with an equation, because it's nice to see it with numbers plopped in, right? And you'll see why I mean that it's nice to come up with a shortcut. So let's look at an example. You create a function. Here's today's favorite function is going to be f of x equals x squared. Looks like a good function?
Yep.
Yeah. Can you kind of visualize it? What's the shape of that graph? Parabola. So we can even, in our mind's eye, get a feeling of this thing. So it looks something like this. All right? So our job is we want to create a way of calculating the derivative of this function. So we say, okay, there's two ways we can do it. You tell me if you want. We can create the derivative where it gives us an equation, so we just plug in x to calculate the slope at any point x that we want. Or we can give you one x, and we'll calculate the derivative specifically at that x. Now, the advantage of doing the x one, right, where generically, is that once you've done the derivative, you can give me any x, and you can just calculate the derivative just like that. Or the other technique, you have to do the whole process over again for a different value of x. So who wants to do the x generic one? Right. Anybody want to do the numerical one? There's one.
No,
one.
I'm prepared.
Yeah. Oh. I was going to say.
Hang on a second.
You want to do both? By the way.
If you approximate this h to 0,
yeah.
And to calculate this, you have to take h as 0.
Oh.
And then you have to divide by 0.
Oh, isn't that a bummer? Oh, I can't divide by 0. Remember what I said? H goes to 0, does never equal 0. The limit as h.
But we aren't able to calculate otherwise.
Yes, and we'll show you something wonderful is going to happen. In fact, you'll see it cancel out. And we'll go through it. As we go through it, I'll try to stop at that spot. So you'll sit there and say, hang on a second. Right? There we go. So, we'll do it again. And if you're going to do it with a number, rather than me put an x, there'll be a number there. So let's have a look. We'll use this guy here, so we're going to sit there and say, okay, now, here's a notation, one notation. Now, I like this notation, it's an easy one. You just take the f, put a little tick on the corner. That means this is my derivative. So my derivative is, and I'm just going to rewrite the whole thing out because it's good to do that initially, f, right? Now, because it's in terms of x, I'll do x plus h. You see how the function notation tells us, oh, there's an x in here, so I'll do the x, and but we need the plus h because we're doing that. But the function, h goes to 0, here we go. My function is x squared. So when I put x plus h, what does it turn into? X plus h squared, right? Perfect. So whatever I did, I put it right into my function, and it becomes x plus h squared minus f of x squared all over h. And as the young gentleman told me your name.
My name?
Yes,
I'm Philip.
Philip, as Philip said, if you let h go to 0 right away, look at what happened. You'd have x plus h 0, which is x squared minus x squared, which would be 0. And on the denominator, you would have h is 0, so you have 0 divided by 0. Now, 0 divided by 0, you can do. It's called indeterminate. So, 7 divided by 0, you cannot do. It's undefined, impossible, don't try it, you can't do your life. 0 divided by 0, it is possible to find an answer. In fact, there are an infinite number of answers, but only one that really works. Okay? So, our job is to find the one that works. So, algebra is our tool. So, let's just expand this thing out. Let's just practice algebra. All right, this we know how to do. This is x plus h times x plus h, right? Which is x squared. Yeah, two of them. And h squared. Then this guy says minus x squared all over h. We're getting there. We're getting someplace. We're just house cleaning. All right, let's look at the top. What can we do? Oh, look at the top. Do you see it? Let's do some house cleaning. H moves to 0. Everybody see the x squared? And this x will disappear? Hasta la vista, baby. Get out of there. 2xa plus h squared all over h. Notice, if h goes to 0, I still get 0 plus 0, which is 0, divided by 0, which is determinant. Right? Right? So, right? But what do you notice? Can we see how you can cancel out h's? Now, you gotta be careful, you cannot read algebra skills, so hopefully you awake grade 9 and grade 8, you did algebra. Right? Then h goes to 0, right? This h goes, cancels out one from here and one from here. So this becomes 2x log student plus h over 1, which is the same thing. Add 2x plus h, I'll just put brackets around there just to see what happens. So you see, from here to here, I got rid of that point of indeterminacy, right? It's gone. Baby, it disappeared. Now, I get h goes to 0. As h goes to 0, it turns into a... That is the derivative. Now let's just show what you just found out. Remember, f of x is equal to x squared. Its derivative is 2x. Give me an x. Now I'll give you the derivative. Let's show you. You give me any x on this curve, and I'll tell you the slope of the tangent line at that point. Give me an x.
7.
14.
36.
Oh, 72.
109.
209. Cow.
532.5.
Cow.
Yeah.
Cow. Two cow. You got it. That, and that's the advantage. Now, if we had just, if we had written it and said, okay, let's do it at 2, like I would have said f of 2 plus h minus f of 2, and worked it all the way through, it would come right out of here as the answer 4. But if I pop in the x, I get, oh, I'm so excited, I thought, sure. I get an equation that tells me the derivative at any point. What is f prime at pi? The answer is 2 pi. Done. And this one only works with this guy, right? That's the thing. This is this whatever this guy is, and you can actually see it. Watch this. F of 0 is
0.
Let's see if this makes sense. Because remember, it's gotta make sense. F of 0 is 0. So when x is 0, the slope should be 0. Well, at 0, it's at the bottom of my parabola. Just write the parabola above the axis there. So it's the bottom of the parabola. That's my 0 right there. What is this? What does the tangent line look like right at the bottom of my graph?
Horizontal
line. And what's the slope of every horizontal line?
Because
it has no slope. It's going up and down. Ready for this? Very important. Anytime I have a curve that goes up and down, wherever it goes up or down, the slope of that at that point is going to be equal to
0.
So if I set my derivative, which gives me the slope equal to zero, I can tell you, you can determine where the graph goes has a maximum or a minimum. Because it has a maximum minimum, you don't know which one it is yet. But wherever the tangent line is horizontal. So I have a technique of solving a whole bunch of problems. We'll do that a bit later on. But I just want to let you know why calculus is so important. It allows us to be lazy. It allows us to find maximums and minimums. Right? If you want to figure out what is the maximum velocity, well, yes, some poor dude can do all the measurements. All you need to do is figure out the equation of the curve, do its derivative, figure out where the top is, that where the slope is equal to zero, and you'll either find the maximum or a minimum. And we'll do some examples like that. So we'll do one log the long way, and I want to keep this one on board. So we've done this one. Okay? Derivative of x squared plus 2x. We'll do the same thing. Let's do x cubed. Just take it up a notch. Okay? And then if you're good, we'll see if we can find a pattern. Alright, so f of x equals x cubed. So we say, all right, good. Find f prime. And you go, all righty. F prime of x equals the limit as h goes to zero. F x plus h minus f of x over h. And then you sit there and you plug in and the limit h goes to zero. And x plus h cubed minus x cubed over h. Oh my goodness.
Stay.
Get busy. Expand x plus h times x plus h. Times x plus h.
Now,
those of you working it through the hard way, right? So to expand the thing out, good practice, you'll be good to that. When you go into probably, depending which country you are, which year you are, probably grade 11 or 12, you'll do something called binomial theorem, binomial expansion,
yeah.
Right? And I may do a little thing on that later on, just to show you some interesting shortcuts from doing the binomial expansion, so using Pascal's triangle, little fun technique, or something like that. You can look at this and you can write up the answer in one line. You can impress your friends. No matter what that exponent is, that was x plus h to the 15, write it all up. All right, so we'll see what we've got here. People are still writing, expand this BC out. Some of you will be smart, you'll say, oh, look at this, there's x plus h squared. We already did that, just put brackets around it, multiply by x plus h, and then like terms and stuff like that. Anybody got an answer for the first one? All right, go for it.
x cubed.
H to the zero.
Okay, x cubed, and h to the zero, everybody, h to the zero is? 1, so that's x cubed, perfect.
Plus 3x squared. H to the 1.
Yep.
Plus 3x to the 1 h squared.
Right on.
Plus h cubed.
So I can see that you've done the binomial expansion. You're reciting those zeros and those ones and things like that. The rest of us would have expanded out binomially, right? Nobody had a problem expanding out binomial? It's just boring, really, to say. Well, who wants to expand out stuff binomially? Yeah. And then, of course, I got to subtract. Right, because this dude, all over h. And house cleaning is all we have to do with that. H goes to zero. Let's see what we've got here. I got 3x squared h plus 3x h squared plus h cubed over h. This dude, that dude. So that becomes 3x squared plus 3xh plus h squared. I'll just put brackets, keep them all inside there. H goes to 0, where, so when H goes to 0, where does this answer go to? 3x. Perfect. So that meant that if I graph this BC, you give me an x, let's say 4, and I will sit there and say, on this graph, x equals 4, so the tangent line is 3 times 4 squared, which is 3 times 16, which is 48. I have it. Perfect. Now, I could give you f of x equals x to the 4th, f of x equals x to the 7th, f of x equals x to the 100th, and you'd be here for a week. I might expand this thing up to you, who'd probably be able to expand it out binomially in about 15 seconds, 20 seconds, but you can do it. Look at what we got here. The derivative of x squared, 2x. The derivative of x cubed is 3x squared. I will do the next one for you. The derivative of x to the 4. Yeah, 4x. See the pattern? Yes. Let's just check. Yes, you guys have got it. 100 x to the 99. So, poor Newton, initially, he did the same thing we did. He did it the wrong way. Did the long way, recognize the pattern. Right? Now when you go, I'm not going to prove the pattern. You can do that with in calculus class. Okay? It's very easy to prove. If I do something on binomial, I'll make sure you're nice or fast with proving it's kind of easy. But you saw it work, you notice the pattern. So when somebody does a derivative, they don't do it this way. They sit there and say, if it's a type of polynomial, and this is called a power rule. So, and we'll stop putting these rules up high. So we've got this thing understood. You just pull down the thing, and we'll just put these rules up there. So we'll create some nice easy ones. So power rule. Ready, whenever I've got rule, I'll write it very generically. So x to the n, right? This is like x to the 100, x to the 4, x to the 3. This is x to the n. If f of x is fn, then f prime of x is equal to, let's see if you can write this, n times x to the
n
minus 1. So whatever the n do, it goes down by 1. Perfect. That's a problem. You, no matter what polynomial I give you, right? I can give you x to the 1704, and you can do the derivative. And I can go do the derivative this way, by first principles. Beautiful shortcut. Power. Now, you've already kind of understood the concept. Let me just explain what a concept is. If f of x equals a constant. Now, a constant is just a number. That's just a fancy way of saying a number. For example, y equals 4. So let me, we can get rid of this, right? We don't need this anymore. So let me just graph y equals 4, and I want you to use your knowledge of what a primitive is to tell me what the constant rule is. I don't even have to prove it. Just remember what a derivative tells you. Here's my x and y axis. Here's my curve y equals 4. What's the derivative of y equals 4? What's the slope of y equals 4?
0.
0. Okay. It's just past 4. Here's y equals pi. What's the derivative of y equals pi?
0.
Okay. cows are constant. What's the difference between a cow? So, I don't know. I've been having, I keep asking a cow, are you a constant? And it all symbols move. That's all they do. Okay, it doesn't change, right? And therefore, the difference of any constant is zero, because it doesn't change. It's funny because they write f of x. There's no x's inside constant. It's always, you know, y equals f of x equals 4, f of x equals 7. It doesn't change. That's always the giant goose egg, the zero. Let's try some ones that may trick you. You can pull it from the rule, but what happens if I say f of x? One. Let's see. Well, it's almost like there's a one there, right? And the one goes in front, and the one minus one is zero. X to the zero is one. One times one is one. But it also makes sense this way. What's the shape of y equals x? F of x equals x.
Straight line.
If we make a straight line something like this, and what's the equation of a straight line? Y equals mx plus b format. Everybody remember that? The m is the slope. So the dude in front of y equals x is the slope. And the dude in front of there is 1. All this, it all ties in all the stuff that you did in grade 9. Oh, yeah.
So does the rule still apply if its exponent is like negative or
negative? Sure. Why not? Let's do an example. The question was, what happens if my exponent is a negative or a fraction? We got the rule, we can do anything. Okay, so it goes in front, becomes minus 1 times x to the negative 2, right? And we just write minus x to the minus 2. Okay. Now, by the way, what is that equivalent to? Writing it as minus 1. I mean, this is the same as 1 over x. Lazy way of writing. The negative doesn't mean anything negative. It just means that 2 belongs to the bottom. This one would then be minus 1 over x. Let's do a fraction. F of x equals x to the 1/2. So it's going to be 1/2 x to the
-1/2.
Perfect. And if you can remember, this is 1/2, 1 over, and what's x to the half? And what's x to the half? So that's 1 over 2 times 1 over the square root of x. And I'm lazy, so I like writing it this way, 2 root x. So the half is the same as the square root. So this, now I'm going to do good proper form here, so what did I start doing? F times. So always do this. So once you do the derivative, make sure the process is indicated, just like I did there. Perfect. Yeah, that rule worked great. Look. Before, when we started off with, we just conceptually understood. You can do the derivative of any, right now, any constant, and you can do the derivative of any simple polynomial. Let's try one more thing, another nice little rule. Turned around and smiled. Some different rule. So this means what happens if I've got a function f of x is something more exciting. Yeah, this is not too bad, you know. Proud of these, its mama's proud of it, right? But function has to get out there and do something and expand and experience the real world. And if they experience the real world, maybe my function may look like this. grown, he's experiencing life. It now has three pieces. So if you were going to be a derivative, what do you think he would look like? Now, remember what I said? If you get a brand new function, you don't know what to do, you can always go back to first principles, right? First definition. But if it's going to make logical sense, what do you think the derivative of that would be? You take the derivative of each piece set. So what's the derivative of? Now this is interesting. There's a 3 in front. So this is like 3 times the derivative of x squared with the derivative of x squared, plus 2 times the derivative of x, and the derivative of x is, and the derivative of minus 4 is
0.
And so I go minus 0. So, well, 3 times 6x. It's easy. Let's try another one. All right, there's my function. I don't know what it looks like. If you take a calculator, you graph it, spend 5 minutes, 15 minutes, graph all these points, put a graph to it. We could take, you want to do the derivative, and with your low limits and low algebra, you plug it into there. We're not going to panic. We graph this. We graph the post. It's easy. So, derivative of the first piece. Now, see if you can get in one line, just the first term. See? Which is minus 4 times 3 is minus? Yeah. See if you can see there's a little trick that helps you do that one. The next term is going to be minus 4t plus 1 minus 0 is pi. How many people said that? Said, hey, look, 3 times minus 4 is minus 12. 2 times minus 2 is minus 4. Nice way of doing it. You can kind of see that it looks. You're going to be multiplying 3t squared by minus 4 anyways. And so 3 times minus 4 is minus 12. So why don't do it in one step? 3 times minus 4 is minus 12. Take it down by 1. 2 times minus 2 is minus 4. T squared turns into t to the 1. And the derivative of t is just like a 1 in front of it, it's just 1. Neat. So, we did, and this is what we just did, is the sum and difference proof. That means if you've got a polynomial, right, that means you've got something that has more than one nominal, right? It's a polynomial. This would actually be officially called a trinomial, so you have three nominals, whatever a nominal is, right? But we got 3 of them, so generically they're polynomials. That means it's a poly number, whether a poly is, maybe it's a group, sure. But we do the derivative of each term separately, right? And it doesn't matter if they're added or subtracted, we just use the term. It's a minus, it's a minus, minus, it's a minus, plus, it's a plus, no problemo. So the sum difference rule says if some function, let's call it w of x, is equal to f of x plus or minus g of x. I'm just going to give it to you generically. See how this says? This says I got some function which consists of a whole bunch of different pieces. This is a whole bunch of them. You can do as many as you want. It can be plus or minus. So this dude, this should be my W. It consists of this dude, plus this dude, minus that dude. And all you do is derivative. W prime of x is just f prime of x plus the minus g prime. You just do the derivative of each piece. That's all that says. Okay? This is the thing. You just do the derivative. Just do the derivative. Plus or minus, whatever it is over there. And that would give you the derivative of your joint. So you just do the derivative of the individual pieces. We'll have a break in about 3 minutes, so let's see if I got an example for you to do.
What if it's like a fraction over there, like minus 2 to 4 or something?
Minus, give me a favorite one, I don't care. We can handle anything, we're not afraid.
Just like, we just got minus 4 t cubed.
Minus 4 t cubed.
Minus 2 t to a quarter.
To a quarter?
Yep.
Perfect. We don't panic, we know the rules. We can rock it. That was minus 12 t squared. Happy that one?
Yeah.
Now, 2 times a quarter. Right? And what's 1 quarter minus 1?
Minus
3 quarters. Look at that. Right? All this means is 1 over t to 3 quarters. And 3 t to 3 quarters really means like 4 through to t cubed. But we don't need to worry about that, right? All you calculate, you can handle it. Right? You can calculate it. I give you a 5, and I give you, as long as I give you something that will be really nice with you. That's fine. So the rule is just no matter what's here, you subtract 1.
What's the
one?
That's all it is.
Perfect. No matter how strange it is. Calculate it? Yeah, okay. So like I said, once you understand, remember, let me take this back. What we're finding, these equations right here, will just tell me, if I graph this beastie here, it will tell me, you give me an x on this curve. Whatever this curve looks like, so this you can recognize is probably going to be a polynomial going up, doing something, right? Doesn't have to touch the axis. I give a point, whatever that point is, on the curve, I plug that point, the x value of the point in here, and it will tell me the slope, how fast this curve is changing at that point. The slope of the tangent line at that point. How fast that's changing. How fast that's changing. Watch this. If my position function, if my function represents me, where I am, this tells me my position at a certain time. So you plotted these things, you wrote an equation, told me where I was at a specific point in time, so you cracked all my dots, and you put all the dots, and you found the equation that went through those dots. The derivative tells you how fast I'm changing. My position, right? That's what it is, how fast I'm changing. In a position function, what does it mean when you change how fast some position changes? By velocity. So if I have a position function, and I do the derivative, I get the
velocity function.
Now that is powerful. So all somebody needs to do is plot something. Somebody does an experiment, probably does experiments in your physics class or in your science class at some point, and if somebody just plots, usually something like this, they maybe use S or D or something like that, and they use T down here, and they plot your path, right? Very interesting path, and somebody says, I wonder what the velocity is right there. And they draw the tangent line, that would be zero. But if they still get to knew the equation, they would do the derivative, plug in that point, and they would still get zero. And so once somebody knows this function, and that's what you do through experimenting, you try to come up with the function that mathematically represents what's occurring, the derivative will give you the velocity of that function right away. You don't even have to do, you can even graph the derivative, and you get the graph of the velocity. Now, if my velocity changes, what do we call that?
Acceleration.
So I do the derivative of the derivative, and I've got the acceleration function. I don't have to memorize any formulas. Give me one position function, I'll do the derivative of the velocity function, I'll do another derivative of the acceleration function. Anybody know what the derivative of an acceleration, or what the rate of change of an acceleration is called?
Sure.
What? I can only do that one once. There we go. So I think a break is that is occurring right now. Take a break at 10:20. We got 10:20. I got 10:20. You got 10:20. So we'll continue. We'll come up, finish up some rules. Hopefully, you start to get an appreciation what's happening here. We'll just take it up a notch. At the end, we'll just do the product rule, how to do multiplication division, and then we'll do trigs, and then we'll talk about integral calculus. By the way, you've done about a month and a half of university calculus. Maybe, and depending on which type of high school system you're on, you may have done about 3 months with high school stuff. Right. So just to let you know, you did it in only about an hour.
How long is the break?
About 10 to 15 minutes, usually.